Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm traveling this weekend. This week I'm not at my home base, so I'm at a friend's, and I'm doing this without my computer in front of me, but I have my computer in my brain. And this is your host, PK, welcoming you back to Third Stream View, where we take a libertarian view and a free market view on world events and social issues. And I always like to thank my station here, bbsradio.com, a cool bunch of guys, and I have a lot of freedom here to speak my mind. There's no Zionist control that I know of, so I'm free to say the things I need to do, things I need to criticize and critique, and I appreciate the fact that BBS Radio preserves and respects free speech, which to me is very important, and it's something we should all have and maintain and treasure, along with property rights, because the two are actually inseparable. But again, my thanks to bbsradio.com for letting me bring this worldwide, and I enjoy speaking about the issues of the day and things that concern me and my take on things. I'm going to have a guest friend call in a little later, hopefully, and he's going to talk about gold. He's a gold investor. We're going to talk about the gold standard. He's got strong libertarian sympathies. He probably is a libertarian, and he knows quite a bit, I think, about Austrian economics. So he'll be calling, hopefully, shortly. I gave him all the info, so hopefully he'll be calling in soon. His name is Andy, and he has a good insight about gold. I myself haven't purchased any. I certainly respect its function and its purpose. I'm sort of financially secure in other ways, so I haven't felt the absolute need to get into it yet, but I certainly I know what it's all about. In fact, I've on my own way of it's not gold, but it's a function. It could function as money, and that is I've been stockpiling a bit of food myself, because I fear the possibility of food riots and or civil war in our country between the haves and the have-nots. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the have-nots today are regular working blue-collar folks who don't have a job, who might be running out of benefits and are at the end of their rope or their hope. And so these are scary times for this economy, which I think continues to worsen, and government policy makes it worse. Raising taxes, increasing regulations are bad enough, but doing it during a recession, depression, is even worse. It's like throwing gas on the fire, throwing salt in the wounds. But, you know, the politicians never learn. Most of them never learn. I think the Tea Party probably will sell out. A lot of us thought they would water down things, not live up to what they say they're going to do. They're too afraid of cutting where it needs to be cut. And there's a lot of ways to cut it, the budget, in a more painless fashion, especially foreign policy, defense overseas, getting rid of the drug war, all these practical things that they don't want to do. And our elected lords and masters, you know, they have their lavish salaries, they have their lavish pensions, they retire in style, a lot of them are millionaires, so they pay lip service to us, but they don't, you know, if actions speak louder than words, and I think they do, it would seem that they listen to us only as a courtesy, and then they do whatever they want. You know, they sort of got the message last fall. Hopefully the Tea Party gang will try to keep them honest to, the rest of Republicans cutting spending. But we'll see. You know, I'm rather pessimistic about it. I really don't want to see a massive financial failure, collapse, and bankruptcy for the whole country, but it just seems like it continues to go, you know, in that direction. And it's laughable to hear Bernanke talk about quantitative easing, another fancy government name for inflation. That's a concern for the economy, of course. And then you have overseas, like we have more eruptions in the Middle East over there. Gaddafi's, what's his country off? I can't think of his name, the country offhand. But Gaddafi's country of Libya. Libya is now having problems, and that idiot, his military has fired on the people, which is very bad, very wrong. Apparently there was a couple fighter pilots, Libyan fighter pilots, that flew their planes over to an island. What island was that in the Med? To seek asylum. I think it was Malta. And there'll probably be more people seeking asylum. You know, these Arabic or these Muslim dictatorships seems like they're collapsing in a domino effect. But the problem is it's the CIA to the rescue, because they prop these people up anyway with foreign aid and, you know, carrots and in front of them. So I think they'll still have their tentacles quite deeply involved in the Middle East, and that's the problem. It's too bad these Muslim countries can't just continue to embark on a policy of what I like to say is liberty, property, and peace. And it dawned on me that, you know, one could even be have a dictatorship, but I know there's the term benevolent dictatorship. Some of these, if they were dictatorships and they ruled from a concept of liberty, property, and peace, civil liberties and free speech, they could have maintained their little dictatorships and fostered economic and social freedom, believe it or not, and still had law and order. It could still work out, as strange as that might seem. And I know that those countries respect powerful leaders, but that doesn't mean that they have to be overbearing dictators. They could be a strong man and still demand liberty, property, and peace for their people, you know, whatever works. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops. I hate to see more people who are peacefully protesting being shot at or killed, threatened, tortured, you know, and this stuff has been going on, and the more you find out about it, or I've learned about it, the more I realize that the CIA is deeply involved in all this stuff. Their tentacles are deeply entwined. They're entwined in the media over there. They're entwined in the military. They're entwined in foreign aid. Sort of a shadow government here. Of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism. And quite often people who criticize it, people think they're out of hand, just saying, oh, the CIA. The sheeple, the masses, don't even conceive how they could actually be working against our own interests, making us less safe, stealing more money from us to give to these regimes. So the best thing that Washington could do is to shut the money off. In fact, I'd give all these countries, I mean, they're used to this aid, I'd give them all like 6 months or so and say, you know, after 6 months, there's no more American taxes dollars coming your way. Now, Americans can donate if they want, or, you know, anybody should be able to donate to help other people in other countries if they like, but there'll be no more guns aimed at our wallets. So these people will have to get by on their own, and which they should be able to do, especially if they're not interfered with by the CIA and the federal government. It's like Ron Paul says, we should trade with these people, we should speak with them, you know, converse with them, talk with them, negotiate. That's a good thing. I would also advocate not only shutting off all the money, and especially to Israel, but pretty much an arms embargo on all these countries. They've got plenty of weapons. We don't need to be arming more people who become potential enemies when they turn on they turn on the U.S. and its hypocritical foreign policy, you know, propping up this dictator, that dictator, propping up Israel with its endless supply of free American-made murder weapons. So Israel's a bit nervous about this, too. And as far as Egypt goes, I think this whole thing about the Muslim Brotherhood is sort of blown out of proportion. I think that their perceived importance is not, you know, as dangerous as it is, and they're most likely not the Muslim Brotherhood that they were. And besides, they can't be ruled out. They're a political force there. They have a lot of people who like them. So I don't believe that Egypt would be foolish enough to attack Israel. There's no need to do that, they should trade, they should negotiate with Israel, they should keep peace with Israel. Egypt should keep peace with its neighbors, and they should embark on more capital investment, you know, lower taxes. Again, liberty and property and peace. Those three descriptions would work well for any country. And that includes, you know, self-defense and, you know, a defense, but not intervening in other countries, not saber-rattling, not threatening other countries. It's just not worth it. I had a discussion over the weekend about, well, with some older relatives of mine about the burqas and the way the women are treated in Muslim countries. And you know, I strongly said, well, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of this goes on, but it's not worth one American life. It's worth neither of your sons' lives to get rid of the burqa. And she agreed. And this lady's in her, you know, late 70s. She agreed. She agreed that it's not worth it. She deplored the treatment that goes on. But, you know, it's not worth American lives. We can protest it. We can lead by example. We can write. We can broadcast. But that's, ultimately, they have to change on their own. And in terms of Afghanistan, those are centuries-old countries with their own customs and beliefs. And, you know, fierce warriors, they, you know, defeated the British, the Russians, Alexander steered clear of him. He had a rough time there. I guess the only one that had any luck was, I believe it was Genghis Khan, and he had to resort to genocide to get his way, slaughtering a lot of people relentlessly. But I don't think he stuck around too long either. So there's no need to continue. This war is going to be 10 years old this year. It's, you know, I'm sorry the lives that were lost, but it's, in a way, it's laughable that it's gone on this long. That's longer than World War II. It's probably as long, pretty much, as the Vietnam War, which Johnson sent, you know, troops splashed ashore March 65, and they were there till, what, the war ended in 73, so that's about 8 years, and then 2 years later, in the spring of 75, Vietnam collapsed. I heard one about Vietnam was, well, Vietnam is, well, they won the war, but we had better songs. It's my only Vietnam little joke there. Which is not to, you know, belittle the lives that were lost and all the people that died, but it's just, you know, and reflecting on it. And now we trade with Vietnam. They trade with China. You know, in fact, Americans can visit Vietnam, and Americans do visit Vietnam, which is a country that, you know, we lost about 60,000 troops. A couple million Vietnamese died. But ironically, hypocritically, Americans are not allowed to visit Cuba without permission from the State Department. Amazing. And we've never really had war with Cuba. We've had a useless embargo against them that's only harmed them and made it worse for the people, you know, because the Cuban minority in South Florida has a lot to do with controlling U.S. foreign policy towards Cuba. Come to find out that a lot of these Cubans that left Cuba, who fled to the U.S., a lot of them were of the landed class or some of the business class that were supporters of Batista, and these were people that the regular folks didn't like anyway, so they're not really the kind of people we want running Cuba per se if they ever come back and the Castro brothers disappear, or, you know, Cuba is no longer a socialist, communist, Marxist country. I mean, I would have gotten rid of the embargo, you know, decades ago, and then Cuba would be in much better shape. We would trade with them. I'm sure the cruise ships are anxious to go there. There's, you know, Europeans are going there, Canadians. They've built hotels and invested there. So it's just too bad. And again, it's funny. Americans can go to Vietnam, but they can't go to Cuba. Horrors. Oh, my goodness. You know, we're supposedly free. I keep, especially since 9/11, I keep hearing about how free we are. Seems more like we're free to obey, which is something I pulled from Ayn Rand years ago. She used that expression, free to obey. I think she was talking about the Soviet Union at the time. And the U.S. seems to be going more in that collectivist, more big government direction, more government control constantly, more centralization of power, more regulation. You know, more strangling of the economy, everything that doesn't need to be going on to our country, Washington seems to be doing. And they don't care. They're out of touch. They collect the money. They've got their lavish salaries and pensions. And they keep doing what they're doing. Again, just listening to us as a courtesy and then going right back to what they want to do. And everything's been so much more complicated and confused by layers of bureaucracy, layers of excuses and explanations, layers of more government lies, inefficiencies, and it just continues, which is why I've spent a couple of these earlier shows advocating secession, as I still do, my secession solution, and, of course, nullification on the way to get there, nullifying all federal law, if not, well, all that's unconstitutional. Do I hear somebody on the line there?
I'm here.
Hey, is this Andy?
Yeah.
Welcome to Third Stream View.
That's me.
Okay, can you hear me all right
here?
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Have you heard all the wisdom I've been bringing forth?
I just logged in. Yeah. It's all quite accurate, isn't it?
Well, yes. Not only because I'm saying it, because it is. And
So
you are the sort of amateur gold investor. Let's talk about your background. I've known you for a while. You have libertarian leanings. You've read Austrian economics.
Mm-hmm.
You
Correct.
Are in the libertarian camp.
So to speak, yeah. I'm more apolitical these days. There's too many far-leaning characters in all the camps, as far as I can tell.
Well, the classic libertarian, you're a pole of that, don't
classic
you?
Libertarian. Sure, definitely.
Classical liberalism. Your daughter goes to a private Montessori school.
That would be me, yeah.
That's great. And we have to love homeschooling and/or private schools, especially because the teachers' unions don't like them.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So
it's,
if the
it's
teachers'
tough out
unions.
Here. There's a Montessori school here that's a charter school. But if you talk to the people with their kids going there, it says nothing like a Montessori school, but they call it Montessori.
Yeah. Well, the real Montessori schools and, you know, all the private schools and homeschooling is all to be applauded, especially because if the government doesn't like it and the teachers' unions don't like it, they must be doing something right.
That's for sure. And the good thing about the Montessori school is the teachers, they love being there. None of them want to leave.
That's great.
Some come there thinking they're going to be a year or two, and they never leave because it's so good. They can teach the way they like to teach.
Great.
Just as long as, you know, they stay within the school's rules, the Montessori method.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, it's like, for example, chiropractic. Doctors, for years, decades, and some still don't, you know, they don't like chiropractic. They resent it. Well, that tells me that chiropractic is doing something right. If doctors don't like them,
yeah,
they must
and here's
be doing
another thing:
right.
A lot of the kids at the school—not a lot of them, quite a few of them—their parents are public school teachers, and they won't allow their kids into public school.
I know. Well, look at the politicians: Obama, the Clintons—they send their kids to private schools, and they say it's for security. They say it's for security in the the public school system. You know, da 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 da. But you know,
yeah, sure.
They never do.
Meanwhile, in Washington D.C., they're spending $28,000 a year on each student to go to their public schools, and they're failing miserably. Every one of them.
Yeah, well, tell that to the teachers' unions. And now they're wetting their pants. They're wetting their pants in Wisconsin. I mean, I know there's some inefficiencies going on, and I think the Koch brothers are involved in this too. I don't like the corporatism that they espouse and push along. So, interesting to see how Wisconsin develops. Because on the surface, I like to see them get rid of the unions. I'm pro-employee, but I'm anti-union. I'd like to see them get rid of the unions. And collective bargaining.
Let me read a little something to you. I was just reading right now. It's from a commentator through the Casey group. And I won't tell you who it is, but I probably shouldn't use
Doug Casey?
Name. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
And this is one of his writers. He says,
getting back to gold here or schooling?
No, this is a quick thing about the unions.
Oh, okay.
I'll read through
it
quick, and it makes too much sense not to say something about it. It's a comment on public unions. It says, with the protests in Wisconsin, I am again reminded of the inherent logical problems with public employee unions. Labor unions were originally created to protect the worker from the evil capitalist employer. But in the case of public unions, there is no evil capitalist employer. In fact, the employer is the
Good
government.
Point.
good
And government employees are usually the first to defend the government as a public servant of the common good.
Of course.
Well, if the government is such a caring and nice entity, why is a union necessary? Huh?
Yeah, Doug.
That pretty much kicks the ball back into the court to show some reason why they exist.
Well, nationwide,
when they're such wonderful people. Yeah.
Union membership nationwide, I believe, is less than 12%. So what have these damn unions gone into lately in the last decade or so or more? They've steadily started unionizing public employees. And
yeah,
those people shouldn't even be allowed to strike. They're paid through taxes. I mean, police and firemen, well, I know a lot of their contracts, I think, say that they're not allowed to strike. And, you know, they shouldn't be calling in sick or the blue flu or this kind of thing because they're paid through taxes.
They shouldn't take that job.
Say what?
Yeah. They game the system just like anybody else who can get into it. They see the advantage. They see the way they can get a little extra money out of the system, and they go for it like anybody would in their position.
And I've heard them speak. Yeah, I've heard them speak. I've read some of their recent letters, the editor and this and that. They're trying to blend it in like it's the American system, the tradition of the American system and freedom and liberty is having unions and all this stuff. Well, you know, unions are... they're anti-competitive, they're monopolistic, you know. And another thing I like to say, I think Doug would like, Mr. Casey would like this, is that who protects all the thousands and or millions of self-employed people in the trades, self-employed plumbers, electricians, welders, self-employed carpenters? Who protects all those people? They don't pay into a union. They're in charge of their own destiny. They don't need a union taking their money out every week.
Protection, they got to hire an expensive lawyer.
Yeah, and that's another racket because they're tied in too. And you go to a judge, he's a lawyer, you know. So it's part of the whole mess. But as I steer this conversation towards the gold standard, because after all, I am the host of this show.
Okay.
it's not just the gold standard, but gold. I'm more of the philosophical point of it, which you also understand. But you literally own gold.
I've been an investor in it for over 10 years.
Over 10 years now?
Over 10,
so you've got a little nice little nest egg built up.
Yeah. Somebody, a famous investment advisor who writes one of the top-rated newsletters in the country and has been more right than wrong in the last probably 15 years. It is, I won't bring up his name, but he made a comment not too long ago, and I'm going to...
Well, you can bring up his name
for a second
if you want.
He made a comment that anybody who bought gold back in 1999 is probably an investing genius.
Hmm. What was it going for back then, Andy?
About $256 an ounce.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what is it now? Is it 12, 14? What is it?
Right now it's $1,401.50, according to my ticker symbol sitting in front on my computer.
Well, I said years ago, if we really had a gold, if the money was really backed by a gold standard, I think gold would be probably over $20,000 an ounce.
Well, if you took every dollar and matched it to every ounce available in the United States right now, just say what's in the Treasury, the 8,000 tons they have there, which we're not really sure it's there because it hasn't been audited since 1957 or something, and they won't allow anybody to audit it. If they took every one of those, it'd be closer to between $30,000 and $35,000 an ounce to back up every dollar floating around.
I'm not surprised. It would seem that if the people, though, mounted a pretty good stink about it, like on the scale of Egypt or Libya or these other countries, that you'd think the feds would have to back down and audit it because it's the people's, supposedly the people's gold, or however that works. You think there'd be enough of a public outcry about it.
You would think so if people were concerned or even had gold on the radar screen. Most Americans are clueless about it. I was skiing.
But we're exceptional. We're exceptional Americans. How can you say that?
Well, here's an example. Just recently, I was skiing up in Northern California, and I happened to start talking with this guy in a bar, and he asked me what I did. I said, well, I do some investing and stuff. He goes, oh, what do you do? Commodities, stocks, things like that. Mostly natural resources, I told him. And he goes, oh, you mean like gold and silver? I said, sure, yeah, I've been in that. He goes, I don't get it. And this guy, I said, what do you do? He goes, I'm in finance. I'm a financial advisor, and I work with finance. And he has a son sitting next to him about to turn 21, and he's trying to explain to him. And he goes, I don't get it. That little thing of gold sitting in your hand, how can that be worth $1,400? I don't get it. I said, well, You and 99% of America don't get it either. I said, and yet, if
neither
you go anywhere else in the world, any country in the world, you take that piece of gold, they will gladly exchange their currency for that. You can have their money any day. They'll take the gold off your hand. The Chinese will take it all.
And he just kept
rolling his eyes and didn't get it.
Well, isn't China and India also buying a lot of silver?
Yeah, China especially right now.
Wow.
They're buying everything they can get their hands on.
Uh-huh.
From what I've been reading... Go ahead. From what I understand, the Chinese are buying all the silver they can get their hands on. They're buying into the SLV, which is the silver ETF that trades out of New York. They're buying contracts and taking delivery on it, which nobody does that in the U.S. They just trade it up and down. You try to make a profit off the paper.
Are they taking it back their currency?
Yeah, they're using. Yeah, that's supposedly that's the idea. They want their yuan to be 100% gold backed, or a percentage gold backed, I should say.
I just read today that Brazil's a little up. China's like Brazil's leading trading partners, but
yeah.
Brazil's a little upset with China because they're undercutting their industrial base, I heard.
Chinese
wages are going to probably rise in the near future. I mean, people think that they don't make, they make dirt kind of money, but it's, if you look at the wages in Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, they've gone up over time after investment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to happen in China.
Their wages have already started going up. In fact, they're almost becoming uncompetitive. Some manufacturers are trying to move out of China, going to Thailand, going to Laos, going to Cambodia, because wages are still extremely low.
Yeah, well, with more investment and capital investment and all that, wages are going to rise, and there'll be, I think even Mises spoke about a tendency for an equalization of wage rates.
Sure.
Americans don't like that. I mean, they're used to their high standard of living, and, they're going to have a reckoning day probably in our lifetime.
I think it's already arrived in a lot of cases.
The
unemployment rate as high as it is.
Yeah, well, I don't believe this BS about we're pulling out of this recession, or even a year or so ago, idiot Bernanke was saying starting to see green shoots.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Green sprouts.
That's nonsense.
It ain't happening.
Listen to Jim Rogers, the famous investor, Jim Rogers.
Yeah.
Of the infamous Quantum Fund, used to be George Soros' partner, but he's much more,
he's
a lot of the Mises Institute.
His kids are learning Mandarin.
Yeah. He said they're both becoming
Singapore
right now. Yeah. But he said Bernanke's a fool. The guy's out of his mind. He says he's the last person you should listen to when it comes to investing or saving.
He's awful. Well, is he any worse than Greenspan?
I don't think so. I think it's just the continuation of the legacy.
Personally, Greenspan's the main. He's the main perpetrator of this whole mess we're in, and Bernanke's followed it forward. Personally, in my own humble yet all-knowing opinion, I think they should be tried and executed behind the White House, and a lot of, in the classic execution behind the head kind of thing. I mean, that's that, and I don't say this because I'm some kind of leftist or a Shay wanting to murder innocent people.
No,
but
I think
Bush, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, there's a whole bunch of that I recommend immediate trial and execution of, and the world would breathe easier and they would be happier that we got rid of our own criminals. They're relentless. But the good news is, and I think this is funny, is that last week or 2 weeks ago, you might have heard this, that SOB Bush, he had to change his travel plans in Europe. He was not welcome in Switzerland, and he's afraid that he will be arrested and tried for war crimes or brought to The Hague.
Wow.
Did you know that?
Wow.
Yeah, he changed his plan.
Switzerland is one of my favorite countries. In fact, I could say it's my favorite country in the whole world.
He changed his plans to go to Switzerland. He was already in Europe, I think, and then he got wind of that, and he changed his plan. So that's great.
Wow.
I would love to see Bush not welcome anywhere in the world. He can stay in the U.S. I mean, he might have to come from here, too, but, and Cheney's worse, and Cheney presented, this is sick, last weekend at the CPAC where Ron Paul once again won, Cheney presented that son of a bitch Rumsfeld with the Defender of the Constitution Award.
it's like newspeak has come to the modern day. I mean, it's so backwards.
But you
this
can see,
like something straight out of 1984.
I know, but you can see on YouTube, you can see video of Cheney and or Rumsfeld being ridiculed at public events, or people calling them war criminals and
calling
them out. There's a lot of this out there that, you know, the main media, of course, doesn't bring you.
Of course not. Of course
you know.
Not.
So, but anyway, back to gold. Now, do you own the gold as investment as much as you do in case the economy collapses? You'll have something to, you know, use for barter?
Well, originally I started up just because I saw it was such a good buy. I mean, when it was $256 in 1999, it was like, that's like buying $35 gold back in 1972.
Yeah.
Back when it was still valued at, you know, $35. Now it's $42 on the books of the government. You know, 8,000 tons at 42 ounces, $42 an ounce. Insane. But, you know, the market tells you what the value is. It's whatever people are willing to pay for it, as things always are.
Of course,
but
yeah.
That's how I started. I started because I said I was looking at the futures markets. I started trading in them, and I said, wow. You know, people trade gold because they say, oh, it's shiny, it's gold, look at that. Yeah, I said, oh, God, that's cheap. So I, you know, and then Y2K was coming along, and I said, you know, I just started buying some gold coins. And then I went from there. And the more I studied, the more I read, and, I was reading Mises. I was reading, you know, historical books. I was reading, you know, everything from the 1920s. The Weimar Republic stuff, and you know, and I looked at the dollar, and I studied the history, and I said, this is ridiculous. This is the only thing. This is the only way you can save your money right now. If you want to have a true savings account, you buy gold or silver.
Yeah.
Because it's the only thing. You know, paper isn't money. It's currency. It's an exchange of paper. It's, you know, we promise to pay.
Right.
You promise
backed
to pay.
By nothing.
Gold has no debt on it. If you own it, it's not backed by somebody else's promise to pay, and that's the strong point about it.
Right.
Unless somebody physically steals it from you, it doesn't become worthless.
Well, something I read lately that was a little scary, I think I read it a couple weeks ago, is that now, you know, they confiscated the gold at SOB Roosevelt with his Emergency Monetary Credit Act. They confiscated people's gold and gave them, what, a certificate for it or an IOU or something?
Right.
They gave them something in return for it. I forgot
exactly
what
they gave
them. Yeah. So, but anyway, there's that possibility. They're talking about government, you know, might want to be able to seize people's gold. They want to know how much the gold sellers are selling, anything over $600, something like that. It's something
that's been defeated, though. That was the 1099.
Yeah.
It's been repealed.
So, but don't you recommend people who own gold to literally have some stashed hidden somewhere that they could get to?
Well, the biggest recommendation is to have some stashed close by.
Yeah.
And also have some outside of the country if you can do that.
And probably
have
not somewhere
so in
your
case
home.
There is a confiscation or if something really bad happens, you can't take it with you, you have some someplace else.
Right. Probably not stashed in your home because those pricks from the feds, you know, they could come into the home and raid it and try to find it.
It's possible, but there's been a really good argument made against the possibility for confiscation. Now, you have to understand, in 1933, this confiscation was because they had to back up the dollar. They wanted to issue more currency, but they couldn't without more gold because that was the law at the time. So they confiscated all the gold. They devalued the gold from, what, $20 an ounce to $35 an ounce, I think, or 33, 32, like overnight. So everybody's money was suddenly worth less, and they had more money to spend on their government schemes. That's how that worked. They bailed out the government by confiscating gold. Nowadays, they don't have to do that. They just push a key on the computer screen, and they create $1 trillion out of nothing.
Yeah.
So there's no, the dollar isn't backed by gold, so there's no reason for them to confiscate it.
Britain went off the gold standard in 1931, followed by the U.S. in 1933.
Right.
And that idiot, Churchill, you think, good, he brought Britain back on the gold standard after World War One. Yeah, but at the pre-war value of gold, when it wasn't, you know, he tried to overvalue it. So
completely overvalued.
That had a
he tried to make value by decree instead of what people were going. Yeah.
And then the Fed tried to prop up, Rothbard writes about it, the Fed tried to prop up Britain's Bank of England. You know, so there was collusion between the Fed and the Bank of England, which made the whole thing worse, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's part of it all. So you've invested. You were studying it over the last, or about starting about 10 years ago, and so you've now you've amassed a little nest egg yourself of it all.
Yeah, socked it away. You know, put it in places where it's safe. And,
are you still buying any more?
Oh, whenever I can. Yeah.
Do you buy any silver?
Anytime there's a pullback, I buy silver, buy gold. By the stocks are still incredibly undervalued. uh-huh. even though some of them have gone up 10 times, 12 times, some have gone up 20 times.
Now, here's a question. We always hear about, obviously, gold and silver. What would be commodity number three, whichever, in the real world of things? Is there a third commodity that would back currency, or that would be a something to, you know, if there was gold or silver-backed currency, would there be a, you know, because we believe in free markets, whatever people would accept, free of government control.
Sure.
So what would be a, is there any other thing on the horizon or something that people would accept?
The only thing ever equated with gold and silver is oil. But, you know, you can't store it. You can't carry it around with yourself.
Platinum?
You can buy contracts on it. But
what about any other metals? Platinum?
Platinum's, it's
or is it really rare and expensive?
It's hard. Most people, if you look at platinum silver next to each other, you couldn't tell the difference.
Oh, really?
I mean, there is a difference, but, you know, I've seen people with platinum chains around their neck, you know, gangbangers, and I'm, hey, nice silver chain. No, it's platinum. This is platinum.
Oh, really?
You know, couldn't tell the difference. Yeah, people don't get it. I said, no, it looks the same to me.
Wow.
Platinum is more of an industrial metal.
Right.
Although, and it's scarcer. It's more scarce than the others, so, you know, it'd be kind of hard to amass a certain amount. And usually it's used up, like silver is.
Well, where's the main gold production nowadays? Is it still like South Africa, Australia?
No, South Africa's down the line. They've gone way behind. It's China. China produces more gold by ton than any other country in the world right now. They're number one.
Really?
Yeah.
Number gold
is the U.S.
Is gold found in most countries if they dig, if they find it? Is it pretty much nothing spread equally around the world, but does every country have some, do you think?
Oh, in the soil, yeah. If you process enough tonnage, you're going to find some gold. But,
really? For example, England or France might have gold in their soil?
Very little.
Uh-huh.
Very little.
Are there any European countries any European countries that produce any much gold?
At one time, I think one of the Eastern Bloc countries. I don't know if it was
really?
Hungary, or one of those like Slovakia or something around there. But
not
on a massive scale, not on a big scale like you're going to find even in South America. South America's huge right now.
What's Russia been up to in gold?
Well, they produce some, but
uh-huh,
you know. Their machinery and their methodologies are so bad. You know, it's the leftover from their socialistic government, the
really?
Soviet Union.
Yet they're,
they still can't get
themselves
together.
Yet they're at the cutting edge. They're on the cutting edge of deep oil drilling.
Yeah.
Russia has massive oil supplies.
Mm.
Wow.
I've read quite a few comments about American companies, Canadian mining companies who have gone over there, and they always end up pulling out because they just get so screwed. Every time.
By the government?
They make a deal, they start doing it, yeah, exactly.
That's too bad, because Russia could be very capitalistic and very good. It has a lot of natural resources, minerals, educated folks. So
yeah.
You mentioned South America's got a lot of gold. Well, that's interesting, because the Incas had a lot, which the Spaniards pretty much stole from them.
Yeah.
I wonder how they mined it back then. I mean, you know, you're talking about 5 centuries ago. How were they mining it? Was it closer to the surface then?
Yeah, it was closer to the surface. They weren't digging huge, deep mines. I mean, you know, they had their caverns and places where they had their religious rites done. And if you go through South America, you're going to find a lot of places where they're just natural crevices, caves, whatever. And, you know, you go and you start digging. But
well, that would be mainly
at the
time
soil in the
during the Spanish Empire. The main place would have been Peru, wouldn't it?
Peru still has it's still big on mining
because the Incas didn't the Cortez take the Incas no Pizarro. Didn't they raid a lot of the Incas' gold? I don't know how many the Aztecs, how much the Aztecs had, but I thought a lot of it, Spain got it out of, Peru.
I don't know much about that old history there. I know a lot of it came out of Mexico.
Right.
But
is Mexico
right
mining
now,
much nowadays? Are they mining much?
Mostly silver. They still have huge
still
silver deposits.
And you say South America's mining gold too?
Oh, yeah, yeah, on a massive scale. I mean, you can go through, especially Chile, Peru, Venezuela has some, but, of course, Chavez has pretty much put an end to all that.
Really?
You know, nobody wants to go in and work there if they're going to be robbed at the end of the day.
Right, right. Interesting you mentioned him, because as much as I can't stand his idiotic socialist domestic agenda, I do equally, on the other hand, I like, as much as I hate his agenda, I like the way he stands up to U.S. foreign policy.
Sure.
He's so right about that, but he's so wrong about the economy.
About everything else.
I know. It's too bad. Yeah, yeah. A lot of Venezuelans really don't like him. He's got that, well, public employees, and, you know, he's got his nomenclature protecting him.
Sure.
I would think his
and
days
it's all
are crumbling
numbered. Around him.
I would think his days are numbered. Now, another commodity is, well, you know, people steal things today just to turn the metal in to get money for it.
Yeah, copper.
Now, Chile's a big copper producer.
Yes.
You know,
Chile is a fantastic country all around. I mean, for mining, for any kind of business, for any kind of investment, they're
still
rising to the top right now.
Really?
As far as South America goes, it's probably the freest country in South America right now.
Wow.
Besides Brazil. Brazil, but, you know, Brazil's Brazil, you know. It's,
Brazil kind of swings back and forth. You know, it's got that
exactly.
Marxist bitch in charge now.
Yeah.
But she's not maybe ruling that way, but he put her, you know, she comes from a socialist background, this guy that was in power then. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just worry about what they do to the economy. And Brazil suffered high inflation in the past.
Yeah, a massive. There are also people who, you know, they'll buy gold and silver down there.
Yeah.
And
so South America to this day is mining quite a bit of gold then.
Which one? I'm sorry?
South America.
Yeah.
Generally
yeah,
speaking,
the Canadian
South
mining
America.
Companies are down there, and, you know, they're all over the place.
And Mexico is mining silver, a lot of silver.
Mexico's big on silver still. They have gold as well, but mostly silver.
Is there a lot of pollution created by the runoff? Is gold a lot of water intensive?
It depends on how they do the processing. You know, the open pit mines are the way to go these days. It used to be the, you know, it's hard to dig those deep things, but the processing still goes through. But most of them are, they've been so, you know, been set up on by the environmentalists that they've had to
yeah.
clean up their ways, and they become much more, you know, they have to dig the pit, they take out the product, they keep things clean around them, and then they have to refill it and reclaim the land and plant plants. You know, they put it back to the way it was. That's pretty much
yeah.
the law.
Well, that's not necessarily
you know
a bad thing.
It's not at all.
You know,
but you know, they have to put all that money aside to make sure that it's done. Now, in Nevada, they got all these people going, well, the mines have all the money. Look where the price of gold is. Let's tax them some more. I said, wait. They've been in a 30-year bear market. They're finally making a profit, and they want to take it all from them.
Now, what about the exceptional USA here, Andy? Are they mining much gold in the U.S. these days?
Yes. Yeah, Nevada. Still huge.
Especially in Nevada, huh?
Nevada. I think a little bit in California. I've been reading up. They're saying that, you know, gold is so valuable now. Or, well, valuable. You know, the price has gone up enough that some of the old abandoned mines in California can be reopened. Or,
uh-huh.
you know, possibly at a profit, they can get something out of the ground now.
Now, what if we... does Alaska
have
gold?
Alaska, of course. Alaska.
Uh-huh. Now, what about... you said South Africa. What's the problem? Are they running out of it down there, or...?
Well, the mines are so old and so deep, it's becoming, you know, it's cost prohibitive to get the stuff out of the ground. Plus, with the way the government is running the electrical system there, they're having rolling blackouts and brownouts all over. Mines can only run so many hours a day before the power gets shut down.
Oh, boy.
It's a basket case. It's a basket case. The place is a mess.
Yeah, I know. And Zimbabwe is a mess, too.
Zimbabwe. The shining example in Africa right now is Tanzania. Tanzania,
yeah,
which used to be, you know, had 20
before.
Years of civil war.
Tanzania is next to... Isn't Tanzania near Zimbabwe?
Yeah, it's east.
Southeast Africa?
It,
was it a French colony?
Good question. I don't
know.
It's
you
know, mostly Muslim now, but... It's
what?
I don't know.
Is it Muslim?
I don't know if it was a French... Yeah.
It's a Muslim country?
I think so.
I didn't think it had a large Muslim population.
I could be wrong.
It's interesting. I know...
Though.
I know.